Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 29th of April. This hour, the 2012 MetLife Survey of Teachers found that teacher job satisfaction declined from 62% feeling very satisfied in 2008 to 39% in 2012. That's the lowest in the 25-year history of the survey. The report for the Alliance for Excellent Education estimates that between 40 to 50% of teachers quit within 5 years, and over 1 million teachers move in and out of schools annually. Enrollments in teacher education programs have declined in California by 53% over the past 5 years. We've spent many hours on this program talking about education, about testing, about charter schools and voucher schools and public schools and funding for schools. It's an issue that's important to many of us. It's important to all of us, although we have very different ideas about how we should educate our children. This hour, we'll be talking about teaching and what's happened to teacher morale. We'll be welcoming phone calls for our guest at 800-486-8655. We have a variety of opinions on our Facebook page. You may want to add yours, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also send us an email, and that's talk@wpr.org. I must also tell you that we are in our spring membership drive right now, so if you appreciate these kinds of conversations about teaching, about education, please call with your gift. We would so appreciate it so we can keep having these kinds of conversations. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or you can go to WPR.org. Professor Stephen Ward is our guest this hour. He's a professor of sociology at Western Connecticut State University. He is author of a 2012 book on education reforms in the United States, and he is the father of children who are attending public schools. Professor Stephen Ward, thank you very much for being with us.
Yes, thanks, Kathleen.
Would you call this a crisis in American education? It seems to me as though it would deserve that label. If you have teacher morale at this kind of all-time low, you worry about the people currently teaching, and you really worry about the future of education.
Absolutely. And as you were saying a little bit earlier, you know, the MetLife thing is showing that this figure has reached an all-time low. And you find this also in other countries that have undergone these similar types of education reforms. In Australia, for example, you find teacher morale also being quite low. There's a recent study just came out in the UK that's showing that their teachers are also in a similar sort of situation with morale being low. So I think, you know, where you've seen these types of what I'm calling, you know, and others call neoliberal reforms taking their effect, they've taken their toll on teachers. Teacher morale, the turnover of teachers, particularly newer teachers, who don't stay, or people actually going into the profession, which is on the decline. You have to worry about where this leads in a long-term trend in terms of people being willing to go into the profession, or maybe just seeing it as a way station on the way to another career, which is very different than the way teaching as it was professionalized in the early part of the 20th century was thought about. So, yes, I think this is very concerning to see this sort of downward trend that's happening in the U.S. and elsewhere, and where it might lead in the end.
I think that most all of us can remember teachers who had such an important influence on who we became as adults. And when I think about those teachers, it wasn't that they prepared us for lots of tests, which many teachers have to do now. They were just interested in their subject matter. They knew how to identify talents or deficiencies in their students and to get them to study very hard and become really enthusiastic about a subject. The role of a teacher is just so important, and you talk about this move for high-stakes testing and also a centralized control of education, which is taking decision-making out of the hands of teachers, where a lot of people believe it should be. They're trained to be teachers.
Absolutely. They're professionals, so like other professionals of lawyers and doctors, having your autonomy and being able to make your decisions based on your professional expertise and your experiences is a key part of what the profession is really about. And I think one of the fears of standardized testing and the high stakes testing is it's moved into education at really all levels, even higher education, it's creeping in now. But particularly with the value-added measures of where you can have exact outputs of teachers and how much they, you know, add value added to a student over the course of a year. But I think, you know, that those things become very standardized. They're often, you know, provided by companies, like, for example, Smarter Balance and Common Core. You have companies that are providing the test, and everything becomes extremely standardized. So, and even the curriculum becomes standardized because you have to begin to teach toward the test and alter your curriculum toward what's going to be measured, because that's how you're going to be valued, and that's how maybe in some cases you're going to be paid or given raises or even allowed to stay. So in doing so, it begins to create this, I mean, you know, economists call it perverse incentives. You know, once people know what the game is, then they begin to sort of redirect everything they do toward playing that particular game. And I think that may, you know, high-stakes testing may be driving education, driving teachers into that area where they are teaching to the test in order to survive. They don't want to do that. They want to be able to express their autonomy and show their professionalism, but the policies are driving it in a very different direction. I think that then leads to what we're seeing with the morale of teachers in different places.
Let's talk for a moment, Professor Ward, about how we value teachers. You have mentioned the political bashing of teachers that has taken place, and I was amazed to see some comments on our Facebook page that people talk about teachers whining, and you know, the National Education Association is what's pushing them, and their unions, and they're bad, etc. Have we entered, and I'm just trying to figure out when this may have happened, a time when we don't value that profession very much? Why did that happen? And are teachers blaming that attitude for their low morale?
Well, I think it's certainly part of it. I think this is a broader kind of attack on the public domain. So it extends beyond just simply public school teachers, but, you know, public employees, government employees. And the public domain in general is viewed as being suspicious, that it's people who are lazy and unmotivated and who are living off the taxes of other people. So there's been this huge sort of switch in our country over the past 30 years in the way we think about public institutions of various kinds. And with that comes a denigration of public employees, like myself and public education in Connecticut. Those things are not as valued. And you see different politicians of both parties on the right and the left, Democrat, Republican, saying rather nasty things about teachers or imposing certain sorts of policies that are very detrimental to teacher autonomy and morale. So I think, it's part of a broader attack on, and I see it, you know, in the book that I worked on, I argued that this is a whole kind of political shift in the way that we go about doing things, where public institutions are viewed as problematic, and that the public realm can never do things as good as the private realm, and the markets are always superior to state-controlled institutions. And so I think that's part of this sort of bashing. It's a broader bashing of the public domain and public professionals and institutions, and teachers are a part of that. I think teachers probably have taken the biggest brunt of this. They're out there on the front lines. Teaching education in general has always been a lightning rod, going back 150 years or so. It's always been a sort of lightning rod for things happening in society and people criticizing content of what's taught and what should be taught. And so they're sort of there on the front lines of, I think, what is a broader attack on the public. So.
And yet we've had enough time, as you well know. We started this large voucher system education here in the city of Milwaukee is where a lot of it began. Yep. There are many such schools. There are a lot of charter schools. There are all kinds of companies now, for-profit and not-for-profit, all over the country that have made inroads into public educational systems. Mm-hmm. So we've had enough years to say, well, these work better or they don't work better. My understanding is that we haven't really seen much improvement in those standardized test scores as a result of changing the system.
That's very true. This is going back to when these reforms were being touted, and some of them vouchers go quite a ways back, but they've always been promised that this marketization of education and increased auditing of education is going to produce these wondrous results. So we just need to turn things over to or create a competitive or quasi market to generate competition, and in the end, that's going to create better students and better institutions and things of that sort. And as you said, we're 15 years, 10 years, depending on which experiment you want to look at, into these types of projects. And if you go with sort of even standardized test scores, PISA scores and things like that, there have not been improvements on those things. They've remained fairly flat. The dramatic change that was promised by some of the different proponents of vouchers initially, and then charter schools, it just hasn't panned out in the way that that it was initially proposed, I think, and thought about. This goes back a little bit to many of these ideas are very ideologically driven, and I think we have to keep that in mind, that this is really about a kind of privatization of things. And as I mentioned earlier, the idea that everything should be privatized, and the more privatization you have, the better off you're going to be because of the competition it generates and the motivation that it generates among people. But I don't think that model has really worked. And we also have comparative evidence for things happening in England with the free schools that are fairly recent over there, and the education reforms over there. They haven't necessarily panned out in the way that they were proposed. And many of the ideas that we've adopted in the United States really originate in England back in the 1980s and get sort of tried out in New Zealand and also in the kind of the mid-late 80s there with their Tomorrow School Plan. So these things have been around for a while. They've been promoted. The interpretation of the data that always gets put out is always very problematic, depending on who's putting out that data. Now that data gets spun in terms of the success of charter schools, for example. There's always, quite a bit of debate on what these things actually mean, right, when they come out, whether charter schools are performing better than, your ordinary public schools. And overall, the evidence is it's not, although sometimes some reports get spun as if they are.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Professor Stephen Ward. He's a professor of sociology at Western Connecticut State University and is author of a 2012 book on education reforms in the United States. He says the crisis in American education is something to pay attention to because teacher morale in this country has hit an all-time low, and that's what we're talking about. When this started, teachers losing some control in the classroom, a movement toward standardized tests, lots of companies in business now to provide curriculums. We have Common Core Standard, No Child Left Behind. With each new administration, it seems we get a new kind of education reform. Are you worried about the future of education, or do you think that maybe it was so broken that it was time to experiment with what we're experimenting with right now? But it is of concern to find teacher morale at an all-time low because we're always going to need really good teachers, right? So here's our phone number. We'll welcome your phone calls in a moment, 800-486-8655 for you to be on air with our guest, 800-486-8655. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley in our Milwaukee studios, and as you know, this is also our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. You really count on us to talk about the kinds of issues that we're talking about this hour, the importance of teachers in our society, and quite frankly, we count on you to help keep these kinds of conversations on the air. So please give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right, Kathleen. We heard last hour from 13 listeners, and we want to thank each of you for those pledges. This hour, though, we have a goal of 42 pledges. So these hourly goals are very important to us. They help us keep on track financially so we can keep the discussions going strong here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Please take a moment right now and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The chances are pretty high that the Ideas Network has covered an issue that's very close to you, be it education, teaching, healthcare, income inequality, the environment, literature. We try to bring you shows that you will find interesting and enjoyable. Because this touches your life, make a pledge, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And during this membership drive, you can choose the 2015 WPR Artist Mug as a thank you gift for your pledge of just $12.50 a month. That's $150 or more. It's USA-made mug with artwork by Nick Robleski, and that's from he's from the Driftless region of Wisconsin. Your pledge supports this program and all the programs that you love, and you'll love this year's new mug.
It has a scene of two swans floating through a night sky. It's really very pretty, and you can check out the design and ask for the mug when you pledge. Right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I love Morning Edition and All Things Considered.
I love Joy Cardine, Kathleen Dunn.
Of course, I like the music during the day, too. Can't beat that.
I love Saturday mornings.
What Do You Know? Of course, I love that. We love to listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Higher Ground with Jonathan Overby, I absolutely love.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you love at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. KP Whaley is joining me, and we are asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our spring membership drive. Whether your pledge is, I don't know, $5 a month or $100 a month, we really do appreciate your gift.
And if you've never given before, here's what to expect. It's a very short process. It takes just a few minutes. You answer some basic questions like your name, your address, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
And that's it. Make that first, it's it. It's easy, right?
It's very easy.
Yes, it is. Make the first donation to WPR, and chances are you'll feel pretty good about it. Many first-time donors give $5 a month, but the amount is totally up to you. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, all of us here talk about the high quality of life in Wisconsin. Lots of people around the state do. We have great state parks, a respected university system, wonderful libraries, and Wisconsin Public Radio is also part of that high-quality life here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it really is. On WPR, you enjoy lively discussions, in-depth news, great entertainment. Help pay for the variety that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio with your donation. Please give right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And as we said, it really is so easy to give. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of really any amount, say $10 a month.
And the donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. So show your support. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Give as generously as you can.
Yes, give as generously as you can. And after you've made your generous donation to WPR, another way you can help out is by telling your friends and family about it.
Absolutely. Whether you use social media or you call them on the phone. People call on the phone still. I like people calling
people
on the phone. I know. Or if you mention it when you see them, letting them know that you support WPR will help plant that idea in their heads. So make your gift, WPR.org, 888-202-2552, and then let your friends know how good it feels when you support the station that you enjoy every single day.
Yeah, we're still, again, looking for 42 pledges this hour. Your pledge right now during the spring membership drive is really very important to us.
And remember that WPR artist mug designed by Wisconsin artist Nick Nobleski. It's a beautiful design, yours for a pledge of $12.50 a month, $150, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not already a sustainer, you might consider becoming one as well. It's easy to set up a convenient, ongoing monthly donation from your bank account or credit card or debit card, and it goes to keep this funded every single
Absolutely.
Month without you even having to think about it. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Mary from Green Bay says, the programming on WPR and NPR is unbiased. It provides me with enough information on the issues so I feel I can make up my own mind on the hot topics. I feel connected to the world. What a gift to have this at my fingertips every day of the week.
I agree. Yeah, that's a great true. Comment from Mary. And it is. We try very hard to bring you these types of shows like today's topic as well. And we do so to give you the opportunity to think for yourself, get the information, and make your own decision.
Right. And call in and let us know. We have a full bank of phone lines to talk about the future of the teaching profession and why morale is so low. And so we're going to go to you because you add to this discussion as well. Thank you, KP. Mm-hmm. KP Whaley, our wonderful producer, whose work is invaluable and really interesting. So we're talking about teacher morale this hour of the show with Professor Stephen Ward, professor of sociology at Western Connecticut State University, has written extensively about a crisis in teacher morale in this country. We're talking about why there is such a crisis and what it means for the future of educating our children when you have morale so low, so many people leaving the profession, and so many experiments in education taking place. Tons of phone calls coming in, so we will go two phone calls for the professor, and we start with Katie in Clinton. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The question that I have, I know with all the standardized testing and stuff, the charter schools and the vouchers and all that kind of stuff, the testing doesn't really show that the schools are doing what they promised. But my question regards, has anybody ever done any kind of testing as far as what the self-esteem, the confidence of both the teachers and the students, you know, taking them out of a public school where there's a lot more stress, a lot more day-to-day issues type of thing. Some of the charter schools that I'm familiar with are a little bit smaller, more one-on-one. The kids and the teachers both seem to have a much lower stress level. Has anybody ever done a study on that as far as, you know, maybe going back to a smaller schoolroom.
All right, Professor?
Well, yes, there's things. In fact, there was a Gates-funded initiative that was looking at the size of high schools. It goes back, I guess, 10 years or so. The effects of the size of a high school on things like that, both academic performance but also some kind of personality issues. And so, you know, there is that kind of smaller school notion, you know, that if you could just do this in a smaller sort of setting, a more intimate type of setting, that would be preferable in terms of learning. And you can do that, of course, by just taking the student-teacher ratio and driving it down from 22 or 25 down to 15. So, and there's a lot of evidence to show that that increases learning if you bring down the student-teacher ratio in a classroom. You know, I think that that's a great point there about the larger issue of self-esteem of the students, how they feel about school itself. You know, one of the interesting kind of outcomes of this may be for students who, if you're being tested four or five times a year with these major sort of tests, and it seems as if the curriculum is just simply geared to provide you with information for your test-taking ability, that obviously zaps a lot of the fun out of education and creates, you know, it becomes very drudgerous and as you know, it's like going to a job that you have to go to and you don't really want to be there. So I think at the student level, I think it does take a toll when education is just about scores on a standardized test and just about making sure the curriculum is covered so that the scores will improve for the school. So I think that's a great point. I think that it is having an effect on kind of just the motivation to go to school for many students. My middle school daughter, I opted her out this year from the Smarter Balance test happening in my town. And it's almost like a punishment. She has to sit there in a room without her computer and so she can't necessarily access all her homework and things, but she's able to read and things of that sort. But I think it does take a toll on students who begin to see education not as a sort of fun event, but a drudgerous sort of thing that they have to kind of plod through. So
there are more and more parents who are opting their children out, from what I've been reading. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. In Connecticut, it's a fairly small movement, but next door in New York, it's much larger, and so it tends to vary by state. There's some communities where you see the numbers up to about two-thirds, a half to two-thirds.
Oh, my.
In New Jersey, for example, there have been communities that had very high rates of opt-out, so, and in Long Island as well. So you're finding kind of pockets of that where the word gets around. And parents and students decide to opt out. But then you have other places where the rate is extremely low, that people just simply go through with it because they haven't thought about it or reflected on it or just think it's the thing you have to do. In some cases, it's kind of put forward as something that's forced upon you. But yeah, there is an opt-out movement that's pretty large. I think it's growing from what I'm reading. That may, signal this sort of political pushback to a lot of the sort of standardized testing and maybe more generally a lot of the reforms that have been coming through education over the last few years.
Mike in Mequon is next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. These comments are based on experience over 40 years in education in a variety of roles. First of all, what you got a great show, and I'm sure that that your guest is aware of the work by Richard Elmore of the Harvard Graduate School on knowing and doing the right things in classrooms, and the obsession on testing and the like and its effect on teacher morale is a result of a manufactured crisis. We're really talking about policy decisions based on a rule of thumb, not on research and best practice. And where I'm going with this is that, as a principal of a school, trying to address variability in the classroom, among classrooms, really requires professional learning communities and focusing on strategies and best practices. And you're not going to get at that simply through testing or on the manufactured policy side, saying it's about competition. If you look at what's going on in Finland, for example, and it's used as an example, they test once a year. I'm in and out of Japan a lot, as well as China. They test once a year.
Right.
And so I'll leave it at that for right now and listen to the comments
All right.
off the air.
Thank you, Mike. I know you mentioned Finland in your work as well, Professor Ward.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's usually held up as one of the examples of a national school system that does things very, almost radically differently or diametrically opposed to the direction that American schools have been moving toward. But my idea is that I think he had mentioned the professional learning communities. That idea is what teaching should be about. It's that idea that you have autonomous professionals who join together in a group and make decisions about curriculum at the local level. And they share ideas with each other. They share best practices. They're professional. They're going to conferences. They're learning things. They're excited and engaged in what's happening. And that generates this synergy in a school that carries over to the learning experience of the children there. When you have these sort of top-down things coming from Common Core, which is largely a Gates-driven initiative, and then state departments of education, handing down these kind of rigid guidelines, and you begin to take away from that autonomy, you begin to destroy that synergy, and you begin to destroy that sort of camaraderie that teachers have. So teachers become, assembly line workers for, large, companies like Pearson who are designing the curriculum for them. So they're merely the mouthpieces for the platforms that have already been generated and created, and they just simply have to carry those out. And I think that's a horrible way to do education. It's a horrible way to do anything, right? I think in any sort of setting, the more autonomy that workers have and professionals have in those settings to make their decision to determine what's happening there locally and to be politically engaged in their institution, the better you're going to have, the better that institution's going to work, and the better the outcomes of that institution. So I would agree exactly with what he was saying about professional learning communities. Yeah.
We're talking about the teaching profession this hour of the program and looking at some alarming statistics that show that teacher morale has hit an all-time low in this country. Why that is the case, it's resulted in between 40 and 50% of teachers quitting within 5 years. Fewer university students are going into the field of education. Teachers are feeling that they're not receiving a lot of respect, and then they are under an enormous amount of stress. And some of the reform policies have change the very nature of teaching. So you're testing all the time, and what about all the things that you need to learn? It seems to me as though this is an incredibly significant issue that hasn't received enough attention. Who's going to teach our children down the road here? So we're welcoming your phone calls. Our lines have been busy. I know many of you are concerned about the issue, so feel free to call us, 800-486-8655. We are also in our spring membership drive, and your support for what we're doing is the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your place for great programs. We'll get back to Professor Stephen Ward in just a moment. KP Whaley is joining me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right now to make your gift in support of the programs that you count on.
That's right. Hello, Kathleen. Thanks for having me in. We have heard from a number of people who made pledges. Thank you so much. We are still looking for about 37 more pledges in less than 37 minutes. So please go and make your gift to support the station you love right now.
And thank you very much if you've already given. If you haven't, help us stay on track. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Yeah, it's shows like this that keep you informed. And Wisconsin Public Radio not only keeps you informed, but it also keeps you entertained every day. You enjoy this program. You listen to Joy Cardine in the morning. You listen to Larry in the afternoon and many others that you've come to rely on.
It's really true that you get a window on the world that is not to be found anywhere else. So please support the exciting mix of shows you enjoy on this station with your contribution, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you get to decide the amount of money that you can pledge. Every pledge matters, and every pledge helps pay for the programs that you enjoy here at WPR. And during this drive, you can also ask for the 2015 WPR Artist Mug when you give a gift of $150 or more.
It's designed by Nick Robleski. He's an award-winning woodcut artist from the Driftless region of Wisconsin. As for your mug, when you give $12.50 a month, that's $150 or more at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Now, I know you might be thinking that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
That means your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important you are to us, make a pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I have a husband and three sons, and we're all very avid listeners. We feel that Wisconsin Public Radio provides objective and informative information about what's going on in the community. It certainly is a station where you can call in, and you know that for sure that if you have an opposing viewpoint, that it's going to be broadcast because this is public radio. I'm Joan Rudnitsky, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for objective information and entertainment.
I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley asking for your support of WPR. It's our spring membership drive, $10, $20 a month, whatever amount you can give us is very appreciated.
Very appreciated. And whatever your reason is for listening to WPR and this program, The Kathleen Dunn Show, that's also your reason for giving. Maybe WPR is your source of in-depth news or interesting talks about a variety of topics. Or maybe it's the classical music. Maybe you love the weekend shows.
Whatever your reason is, we invite you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support, your support makes it all happen. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's easy to support WPR, and really the easiest way is to become a sustainer. A sustaining membership is one that's an ongoing, either from your bank account or your credit or debit card.
Because it automatically renews, you don't have to remember to renew
like
it every year.
I like when that happens. I
know.
Hate, you know,
it's like, a lot of people do.
Sign up and I can forget about it. And every time I hear the pledge drive come on, I don't have to think about
exactly.
it. I've done my part.
I know. That's good. You're good, KT. Some people give $5 a month, some $15 or $20. The idea is to pick whatever will work for you and then set it up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And then, like KP, sit back and enjoy it all.
Relax, listen every day.
Right,
you've earned
exactly.
it, right? Once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. And WPR, I feel, is really one of those places where it's true every day. You consider a gift of just $2 a day to help support the radio programs that you love.
It's hard to buy a lot for $2, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day creates a lot of learning and mm-hmm. news. That works out to $60 a month. Make that gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. We need 37 more pledges and a few minutes to get there. Your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really helps.
And remember that WPR Artist Mug. It's yours for a pledge of $12.50 a month, $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you for all the sustaining members that we have. You might consider making today the day you increase your support of WPR by maybe $5 a month or whatever amount you can choose. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to do that.
And Mick from Amherst and is 6 years old. Oh, Mick says, I really love WPR. Your parents taught you well, Mick.
Mick's a regular listener.
That's great.
And your pledge really does make a difference. Your pledge from Mick, thank you for your pledge. That makes a difference. Everyone's pledge makes a difference here during the spring membership drive. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks, KP. In this hour, we're talking about how teachers make a difference, but how teachers are not feeling great these days. Their morale at an all-time low, leaving the profession feeling great stress, not feeling appreciated. How did that happen? What can be done about this? Professor Stephen Ward is our guest. He's a professor of sociology at Western Connecticut State University and has written extensively about this issue. We have tons of phone calls, and we will go to Chet in Janesville next. Hi, Chet.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a retired teacher, taught for 33 years in Janesville.
Great.
And retired back in 2007. But since I've retired, and even while I was teaching there, things were becoming politicized. And it goes way back to Reagan with the Nation at Risk. Then eventually we had a QEO here, Qualified Economic Author. We had No Child Left Behind. And then eventually Act 10 that changed everything. And I know the morale in Janesville has been very, very low. And many of them are leaving and going to other school districts or leaving the profession altogether.
Right.
Professor Ward.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you have pockets of where, you know, people are going to leave because of things that are happening locally, whether that's administrative things or town-related things or whatever. So that part is true, you know. You know, the broader issue here, of course, is that people are leaving the profession fairly quickly, and fewer people are wanting to go into the profession, which is very interesting. I think the statistics that were cited on California, the drop in people going into teacher education programs there. And, you know, just anecdotally, yesterday in my intro to sociology classroom, we were talking about education issues, and I asked, this is a class of 35 students, asked who plans on going into education, and this is, I'm at a former teacher prep college, and no one wanted
no
to
one.
No one out of the 35, and normally there's at least two or three students who are planning on going into education. Now, again, it's anecdotal, but I think it does speak to this larger issued out there of that teaching has become something to avoid, or it's not the profession of choice for students. And I think they see what's happening in the broader society. They hear the rhetoric of teaching bashing going on by politicians and others. And so they have seen that profession as not something they want to go into. And, of course, they're coming out of the students now. These are first-year students, for the most part, are coming out of this testing regime. They're sort of the victims of what's been going on for the last 10 years or so in education, or 12 years in education. So I think they've seen that and seen the toll that it took on their teachers in high school. And so that makes them reluctant to go into profession. You know, historically, teaching has been one of those greatly valued professions that, you know, the largest profession in the United States that people would go into. You may have to sacrifice some salary relative to other professions, but
right.
You have stability, you have tenure, and you have autonomy. And
mm-hmm.
Those things are under threat, I think, and which explains what your caller was talking about, I think. And
Professor Ward, it's no doubt that we've got a real problem on our hands here, because if you have that many people leaving and the morale this low, what is striking to me is that nobody seems to be making this issue a very, very important national issue, because it is. It's going to be very problematic for American young people to get educations if you have morale this low and if you don't have people going into the profession. Why aren't we addressing this?
Sure. I think, yeah, if you just think of the economic cost to a school district of having turnover, of that rate. You bring in new people, you begin to mentor those people, and then they leave the profession. So you have that sort of huge cost. I think, you know, the voices, the chorus that's out there has all been the market reform, and those people
right.
sort of drown out any other kind of counter-narrative and other voice that's out there. So when you have something like the Gates Foundation with its billions of dollars, and the Walton Foundation has spent over $1 billion on education reform, when you have those groups out there, they can be very loud, they have lots of money, so they're pushing the agenda of value-added measures, their standardized test scores, Common Core, creating more competition in charter schools. So the chorus of reform is almost exclusively being driven by that particular crowd, and sort of ignoring the side effects of these reforms, what it's actually producing in terms of the quality of the student or what's happening to the teacher profession itself or teacher morale. Those things are just kind of pushed under the rug. Now, of course, there are vocal groups that are out there. The various teacher unions have been vocal about this, various researchers, you know, Richard Ingersoll's work at Penn. So you have things that are out there, but I think it's the voices of those counter-narratives are drowned out by the chorus for reform.
Let's go to Ann in Platteville. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thank you. I also am very concerned about public education, I have a broader comment, and I'd like to listen to your guest. And that is, I think, from listening to government officials and legislators from both state and federal level, there's almost an anti-intellectual movement that's occurring, you know, with science and, you know, information being dismissed, scientists being dismissed. We used to have a federal body of where scientists actually helped to make decisions and policies, and I think that's gone. I just would be curious to know about your expert's opinion
okay.
about.
Yeah. Thank you, Ann.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, are you thinking sort of a deliberate sort of dumbing down of people? I mean, I think that may be one of the outcomes of this, so that you have people who are unable to think for themselves necessarily, or to offer critique, and that may fit with particular agendas. I probably wouldn't go necessarily that far. I'm not that conspiratorially minded, but I think one of the outcomes may be that things that we value, like critical thinking and liberal education and the student's ability to explore different domains on their own, may be being destroyed. So the curriculum is kind of shrinking. The critical thinking is shrinking. And the outcome of that, politically, the outcome of that may be a less informed populace. So if you're, you could certainly make an argument that that might be deliberate on some parts, that that this is a kind of an intentional dumbing down, that, you know, all you need is your basic competencies and skills so you can enter, you know, fit whatever niche in the workforce happens to be in place at the moment. And beyond that, you don't need to think. You don't need to think as a citizen. You don't need to think as a cultural being, a community member. You just need to think as a worker, and education is going to be designed just for that, and I think that's very dangerous. It's a limited vision of what education is supposed to be about. So yeah, I think there probably is some sort of connection there. I don't know how to exactly draw it, but I think there's something to that argument for sure.
And Louis in Waukesha, hi.
Hi. We have public voucher and charter schools, which are very successful. Mm-hmm. We also have public voucher and charter schools, which need a lot of help.
Sure.
I'm suggesting the common denominator here is how well prepared is the student to enter school. Society is sending students to school which really can't hack it.
Yeah. Well, that's, in schools, one of their jobs, of course, is to that idea that schools are going to be the great equalizer, regardless of where you're coming from and your background, and the famous Horace Mann quote, that regardless of your background, that education is going to raise everyone up. And there is a correlation. Sociological studies going back for decades show that there's a correlation between poverty rates and how well you perform in school, how well you do, your likelihood of going on to college. All of those things are greatly affected by where you're coming from and the preparation for that. I wouldn't deny that. And I think one of the things about education reform is of the last, say, 10 to 15 years, is much of it has been focused almost exclusively on the content of things happening in schools. And schools, of course, are not isolated things. They're part of a larger community. They're part of a larger society. So there's only so many things that a school can actually fix with students, in terms of encouraging them to learn, or because they're coming in with all types of preparations and from all different kind of backgrounds and neighborhoods and things of that sort. So you're going to have a great deal of variety there. And schools, we have to think kind of probably more broadly, that schools can certainly transform lives, but that there's also a context in which that school operates that has to be considered.
Professor Stephen Ward, our guest this hour, the future of the teaching profession, teacher morale, how we're changing the way we educate young people, and who will be available to educate young people in the future, considering the number of teachers leaving the profession. We are in our spring membership drive. It's a conversation worth having, and because we are giving you these conversations all the time in lots of shows on education, please support us. 888-202-2552 is the number. We thank Professor Ward for being with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Our goal to keep bringing you topics like education, teachers, the profession of teaching, and its future. Your support makes these conversations happen. So please give now any amount, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And just in the next 10 minutes we have left here, we're still looking for 34 more pledges, again, for any amount. Give to WPR to support the programs that you rely on. And thank you if you already have given. If you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
He was a very good guest, wasn't he? Very earnest and knows the issue you've been enjoying and perhaps worried about the profession of the future of the teaching profession. This hour, an example of the really important and informative conversations we have on this show.
We have these conversations every day. So now take just a few minutes of your time to make this hour and many more of those hours possible. Give a gift of any amount that works for you and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And during this membership drive, you can get that fourth annual WPR artist mug when you give $12.50 a month, $150 or more. Your donation supports all of these programs you count on, and you also get the beautiful mug.
Yeah, it's a USA-made mug featuring a design by award-winning Wisconsin artist Nick Robleski, and it's a woodcut print with two elegant swans, you know, soaring through a starry night. It's really beautiful. Maybe a tea cup instead of a coffee cup, right? Because it's so peaceful to look at.
Oh, I drink my coffee out of it.
Well, you can check out the design for yourself and tell us if you'll drink tea or coffee out of it at WPR.org. Make your pledge at 888-202-2552.
Yeah, we are asking for your support of WPR. Your gift of $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount of money.
Yeah, you can pay $100 a month for your cable service. But are you willing to do that for the entertainment and information that you get at WPR?
And actually, you get so much more here than you do there. In fact, the quality of what you get from WPR is really unmatched. Becoming a sustaining member with a 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or more, you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you make your pledge, you know that you can count on getting reliability and value in return for your investment in WPR. We're reliable, we've been here for decades, and there's no end in sight.
And we're great value. You can turn on the radio any hour, day or night, and hear something interesting and learn something new. And you get to decide how much you pay for this great service. So invest in WPR right now by choosing the amount you want to give, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
When you become a regular listener of WPR, you took the first important step. Now take the next step by becoming a financial supporter.
The step from listener to supporter is very easy. Decide how much you'd like to give, $5 a month, great starting point, and make your pledge, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you very much, and thank you, KP.
Thanks to all the people who have pledged.
Absolutely, and we hope many more will. 888-202-2552, WPR.org. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this interesting show on the future of the teaching profession. All of you people in education, you know, pledge this hour. It's an important discussion. We haven't had enough of them. And thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Thanks for listening. News is up next, and we'll return with Daniel Golden.